I think of iconic public art, the first thing in my mind's eye is the giant Spoon Bridge and Cherry in Minneapolis. I grew up with that amazing sculpture garden. The Walker Art Center installed it in the mid-80s. I was a tween then. I also think about Chicago's Cows on Parade installed in the summer of 1999. Those decorated fiberglass cows took Chicago by storm, and the display's popularity, it spawned copycat projects for years to come as other cities put on their own cow displays. We are going around Wisconsin looking at public art in communities here on Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Clyde Winia is the co-owner and co-founder of Jurastic Park. That's what you heard. Jurastic Park in Marshfield with his wife, Nancy. Since retiring from law, he's become an amateur paleontologist. Clyde, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Can you start by telling us what in the world is Jurastic Park? What does it look like?
Well, it's about an acre or a little more of metal sculptures. And in amidst the sculptures is my wife's studio called the Hobbit House, where she does her work. But it's a collection of my metal sculptures.
Your metal sculptures. So you've created this art.
In a way. See, about 25 years ago, I made a big bird that hung it in the tree. It's got a 9-foot wingspan with hinged wings, and when you pull on the rope, it flies. The wings flop, and if you snap the cord down, it rings because made out of part of an oxygen bottle. Well, I never intended to make any more, and a neighbor came by. He says, "Where do you ever get something like that?" Well, the first thing that came to my mind is I dug it out of the marsh out here, inhabited the marsh during the Iron Age, but they're extinct now. Well, I couldn't stop with one. I just kept digging them out and welding them back together. And so with no advertising, no signage, people just started coming. So I finally put a bridge across the ditch, and people started walking across that and looking. It got so busy and in sales and visitors that I decided to play the rest of my life. So I sold out to my partner. It just kept on growing. Right now, it's crazy. I'm getting around 15,000 people just in the summertime, but they come all year. I'll give 10, 12 tours a day during the summertime. I'm selling hundreds of pieces. Last year, they signed our guest book from 34 different countries, 32 the year before. So it's just gotten fabulously busy, and we're open 10 to 4:30, 8 days a week. So it's just a wonderful retirement experience.
Help us describe the grounds and how these sculptures work into the landscape.
Well, it's in a little field beside our house, and there are some trees, and I have some gravel paths amongst the sculptures and past my wife's studio. It also goes around. I have a workshop out there, and the path leads around that, which is sculptures on the walls and behind it and alongside of it and on up to my wife's studio, and her porch are all full of these sculptures. So it's a kind of a little trail around there, and I take people around there and demonstrate the moving ones and tell them the stories and then ultimately take them into my wife's studio and explain that.
Tell us some of these stories that you tell your visitors. What do you tell them? What do you say?
Well, I explain them to them, and it's a mixture of stories. And the people who come say they insist that I be here when they bring guests, and they bring the guests from Appleton, Madison. I get people from all over bringing guests in once they've seen it. And the comment is always, well, the sculptures are great, but the stories are why we come. And so it's an explanation of these stories, which gets people laughing. And this is the thing, is it becomes a humorous experience for them. And in our guest book, we have, thousands and thousands of comments. And it's mostly on what they see, but the humor of the place.
So these are welded sculptures. Do you use the same themes in these sculptures?
Do I use the same theme?
Yeah, yeah. Or
No.
Not necessarily.
Not really. The sculptures are, they look like dragons, they look like dinosaurs, they look like dogs and cats and frogs and flying pigs and owls and any number of things that whatever I find out in the marsh, you know.
What is your favorite one, or can you pick a favorite?
I don't dare have favorites. What would the others think?
They're an extension of your personality. They're all your favorite children, right?
Yeah, they are. You know, they're my buddies.
So there are these sculptures, and then there's Nancy's work in her studio. Can you tell us about her art and how it fits into
the park? She does two different areas. She's knit since she was a little girl, and in the last 50 years or so, she's gotten into spinning and knitting and drying, everything with the wool. She makes sweaters and bags and now within the last 21 years or so ago, she got into hot glass, and she has several torches, and she melts the glass and makes fancy glass beads, teaches a lot of classes in bead making. She also does a lot of work with the Pyrex glass, and she's got a glass lathe that she turns out ornaments on. So she has quite a display of her work within her studio there, and she sells a lot of that. She likes to travel. She's been to New Zealand, Galapagos Islands, all over Europe, and she pays for it with what she makes there.
We're talking with Clyde Winia. He is co-founder of Jurastic Park in Marshfield. We're talking about public art, public spaces here on The Morning Show. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about Jurastic Park? What sculptures or other outdoor art exists in your community? And what do you think is the value of art in outdoor space? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So, Clyde, how did you become welding as part of, you know, an integral part of your sculptures? Do you know how to weld, or how did you teach yourself how to weld?
Well, I went to law school.
Oh, of course, right.
I grew up on a little farm about 80 miles from here, Cordell Holcomb area, and we didn't have any money to buy a welder. So when we moved to town here 56 years ago, I bought a welder, and through the years did a lot of making my own saws and tools and trailers and all that type of thing. So I just gradually got into the welding stuff as just a hobby type of thing.
How is that going for you? Because welding is, there's a lot of artistry and precision that goes into welding.
Well, you look at my stuff and look at my welds, and there is, precision does not fit into the definition.
Can you walk us through your artistic process? What goes on in your head?
What is run in my head?
Yeah, how do you go through your artistic process?
Well, I get these ideas every time I go off my meds. And the only meds I have are aspirin, and my wife hides that, so I get the ideas. But, I look at a lot of places for ideas. The net is such a wonderful place to look for all kinds of ideas, see what other people, and incorporate different ideas that might go over and which might be fun to build. And so I have a big scrapyard in town. They help me out, family corporation. They save stuff for me. Half the stuff I make out of is new metal. And a lot of that new metal comes from fabricators in town who are former clients of mine, and they give me their cutoffs. But I also buy new metal, which is seconds from southern Minnesota and big sheets and that. And so a variety of sources for the material itself.
So
but some of the inspiration comes just from the found objects you get out of the scrapyard.
And at what point do you decide what kind of creature it's going to be?
Oh, boy. It just happens so fast, I don't know. Well, at what point? There's just, you know, you're working on things, and I've always got several subjects going on at a time. Some of the, I don't do any custom work on people's except for schools. I never I never sell my large pieces. I either give them to the schools or churches or other institutions, the Chamber of Commerce. So I've got large pieces all over town that that I don't sell. I just donate those.
Well, Clyde, thank you so much for acquainting us with Jurassic Park.
Well, thank you for having me.
Clyde Winia is co-owner and co-founder of Jurassic Park in Marshfield with his wife, Nancy. He joined us to kickstart our look at sculptures around Wisconsin. What sculptures or other outdoor art exist in your community? What do you think is the value of art in outdoor space? Call in at 800-642-1234. We'll continue our tour of art after a news update here on the Ideas Network. The Spire of Dublin is the world's tallest public art. We're going on a tour of public art on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Good morning. Public art, by definition, is art in any media that is planned and executed expressly for the intention of being installed in the public domain. That means perhaps outside, no tickets, no admission fee. Kathy Schlevey is city administrator and director of economic development of the city of Waupun, which is known as the City of Sculpture. Kathy, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Well, how did Waupun get this distinction of being the City of Sculpture?
Waupun has been designated the City of Sculpture for as long as I can remember. I grew up here. What's unique about Waupun is we have one of the highest concentrations of public art per capita in the United States. So around our community is there are a number of historic treasures, really, that were donated to the city by a famous industrialist who started his business here.
And so who was this famous industrialist? Give us an introduction.
Yep, so Clarence Shaler was an individual who started producing hot patch car tire patches. So if you had a flat tire, that was one of his products. He worked on and improved the umbrella, so worked on the retractable umbrella. He was an innovator in golf clubs. Actually, one of his sculptures, he was very instrumental in starting our golf course here in Waupun, and one of his sculptures is on display there.
And when did he begin sculpting his own pieces, or how did that start to take shape?
So he, as he traveled the country, he really fell in love with art. And one of the first pieces that he was responsible for bringing to Waupun was the End of the Trail sculpture. And some people may know what that is and others don't, but it depicts the plight of the Native Americans. And he was in California, I believe, at the time at the 1914 Panama Pacific International Exposition. Mm. And he saw this art, and he later commissioned its sculptor to bring it, who was James Earl Fraser, to bring this to really life size. And he paid about $50,000 at the time, and in 1929 donated it to the city of Waupun. Today it's a Wisconsin landmark, and it's listed on the National Register of Historic Sites. And then he had a few other pieces, and then in his 70s, he really started to express himself through sculpture, and there are a number of pieces on display around the city that he actually brought, that are his own creation.
Yeah, so what are the more higher-profile sculptures or the ones that people come to Waupun to seek out?
Yeah, so the End of the Trail is probably one of my favorite and probably the most famous, I would say. But aside from that, there's a sculpture that sits in our cemetery. It's called the Recording Angel. And each of these sculptures has just a real unique story behind it. So we have a lot of information on our website, but people can learn about the history. So the Recording Angel was one that he dedicated to his wife when she passed, and it overlooks It's kind of on the hill in our cemetery, and it overlooks the entire cemetery. And that's pretty well recognized and famous. It's also on the National Register of Historic Sites. One of his more unique and the most recent that was dedicated in Waupun in 1994 was a sculpture that he did called The Citadel. And his family's version of this sculpture is that it depicts kind of the trying times that were happening during Nazi Germany and the battle that ensued there. So it's almost got this evil kind of feel to it. I think one of the people I've heard talk about it says that one of the figures in the sculpture itself is the devil, and the people seem real oppressed. So there's a person that's just looks very deflated, and it's just a really unique expression. And others are more kind of, you know, what the lay of the land is here, if you will. So there's a sculpture called Who Sows Believes in God. And that's really, I think, a dedication to kind of our agriculture base and the things that happen here. The pioneers, it's, you know, what happened when people came to just really develop this area. And so he has a sculpture that he created that was really a dedication to his parents called the Pioneers. And maybe the most famous, go ahead.
Yeah, are all of the sculptures in Waupun by him, by Shaler?
All but two. So the end of the trail, it was done Earl James Earl Fraser.
Mm-hmm.
And then the recording angel was done by Laredo Taft. And then the others were done by Shaler.
And is there a specific trail that you can follow through Waupun to see the sculptures?
Not necessarily
okay.
A trail, but that's a great idea. Take that. But we do have maps, and we do have a lot of information with location information on our website, and you'll find brochures around town. And most of these are in their original site of dedication. So we haven't moved, but yeah, naming a trail would be a great idea.
And Kathy, before we let you go, what is the value of having access to sculpture and public art in Waupun, in your community?
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the art itself is, you know, can be expressive, right? But for us, it's a legacy. It's very much kind of the base of who we are and how we came to be as a community. It has a lot of meaning in that regard to our locals. So I think it's both expression, but I think it's also remembrance, legacy, and a statement of who we are.
Well, Kathy, thank you so much for joining us and telling Waupun's story.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Kathy Schlevy is City Administrator and Director of Economic Development of the City of Waupun, which is known as the City of Sculpture. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What sculptures or other outdoor art exists in your community that you're proud of? 800-642-1234. Let's go to Florence now. Florence Bird, go ahead.
Good morning. This is Florence Bird. I'm the sculptor for the Mississippi River Sculpture Park in Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin. And this is a sculpture park which is about maybe 1 acre on the large island called St. Ferial Island, which is connected to the city of Prairie du Chien by a small bridge over the slough. The sculpture park is all about the history and the prehistory of this area, the confluence of the Mississippi and the Wisconsin rivers. And
what a treasure.
It's a very wonderful place, and I discovered it in about 2001. And I have my degrees in figure sculpture. So I started making maquettes of some of the historical figures that have been famous here, and started out with Black Hawk. Since then, after introducing it to the city, this sculpture park is a city park. It's open all year long, all day and night. and it's free. And so far we have five life-size bronze figure sculptures in the park. We have Black Hawk, and we have Dr. Beaumont and his little son.
Oh.
And we have a Victorian lady, and we have Julian Courier, a voyager, and Emma Big Bear, a Winnebago woman.
And this is all in Prairie du Chien, right?
This is all in Prairie du Chien on St. Ferial Island. And it's located actually right near Villa Louis, which is an historical, you know, mansion. Mm-hmm. The people tour through.
Well, so, Florence, thank you so much for bringing that to our attention. And thanks so much for calling in. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Let's go to Rob now in Baraboo. Hi, Rob.
Good morning. I wanted to mention what is likely the oldest and perhaps some of the largest of public art, outdoor art in Wisconsin, and that is the effigy mounds, or created by the Native peoples roughly 1,000 years ago, that is found throughout southern Wisconsin.
Oh, Rob, you're thinking on that one. That is a really, incredible and not to be overlooked.
And there are sites really throughout southern Wisconsin that people can visit. These are huge. Some of the mounds are hundreds of feet in length or width. They represent animals, both actual animals and animals that are part of the cultural beliefs of the Native peoples. They are burial sites and thus should be respected as such. In fact, there was a law that was just signed this week to give further protection to these sites, but they're also incredible works of art. They are what we would refer to as bas-relief sculptures.
Mm.
Some of the ones that can be visited around the state and are easily accessible include the Man Mound here near Baraboo, a 214-foot-long image of a human wearing some sort of projections from its head. It has recently been named a National Historic Landmark. There are mounds to be found at state parks around the state, including Devil's Lake and High Cliff State Park. There's a wonderful site near the Wisconsin Dells that's owned by the Ho-Chunk Nation. It's called Kingsley Bend, that includes bear mounds and birds and water spirits. So these sites are really throughout the state and are well worth visiting, as well as understanding and protecting. There were at one time at least 2,000 to 3,000 of these, perhaps as many as 5,000. But today, perhaps 3/4 of those have been effaced from the landscape.
Well, Rob, so fabulous of you to call in and bringing effigy mounds into the conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Now let's bring in Julie Pangallo as we travel to Eau Claire on this whirlwind sculpture tour through Wisconsin. Julie is Executive Director of Sculpture Tour Eau Claire. Julie, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good morning.
Well, how did Sculpture Tour Eau Claire get started?
A woman named Sherry Moore started it. She moved here from Sioux Falls and had seen a similar program there and just said, we're going to make this happen.
What are these sculptures like and where do you go? Take us on a tour.
Okay, well, we have 42 sculptures that change out every year. The pedestals are permanent, and every spring we change the sculptures. And they run through downtown Eau Claire and up around the Mayo Clinic Hospital and Water Street, which is down by the university. So there's three different areas that are close to downtown that have sculptures. And we're getting ready to take down the sculptures for this year, and we have them down for a couple of weeks while we change the signage and make repairs and things like that, and then we put up new sculptures, and they're up for 11 months.
And who are the artists, and how do you pick them, and are there themes?
There are not themes because we try to go for diversity in the program. We try to show different kinds of art, you know, figurative and contemporary and, you know, different styles of art and different materials and also cultural differences. Art is a wonderful way to unify a community.
So the artists come from all over, or are they specific to Wisconsin?
No, they come from all over the country. We've worked really hard to build the local base of artists. So about a third of our artists are regional artists, but the rest come from Colorado, Wyoming, Georgia. We have Canadian artists. I mean, we choose them from all over the country. We do a call to artists in July, and artists have until October to respond to that and submit. And we also work with five other sister cities to exchange sculptures and to promote our local artists to their communities.
Well, it sounds like this is also because you change these sculptures, that this is not a permanent thing. They evolve as the community evolves, as artists evolve.
I would say that's very true. In the time that I've been involved with it, this year's program has a lot of huge pieces in it, really much larger scale than it has been in the past. When it started, pretty much all of the pieces came through this partnership network, and there was it was a lot of bronze, you know, that were 2-3 feet in diameter, you know, a typical bronze that would sit on a pedestal. And this year, I'm a little bit nervous about installation. We have a lot of big pieces coming in that are really going to have some wow factor.
What's your favorite one coming in?
Oh, boy. That's hard to say. My favorite one going out, I would have to say, is a sloth. It's a darling little sloth hanging in a tree. But we have what's called People's Choice. All summer long, our residents and guests are invited to vote for their favorite, and then we purchase that and gift it to the city. Sculpture Tour here is a nonprofit organization, so it's not a city-run or state-run program in any way, but we gift a sculpture every year to the city to add to the permanent exhibit. So every year our Sculpture Tour grows by at least one.
And tell us the timeline here again. When does the 2018 tour launch?
We always put it up the week before Mother's Day, because Mother's Day weekend is a great time for families to get out and go looking around. And, you know, the weather is hopefully starting to break by then. And
is this self-guided? Is there a map involved?
There is a map involved. We have a website with a map on it. That's sculpturetour.org. But we also put the map, we print the map with all of our sponsors in it, and have that in different, there's brochure hangers along the way, sort of like you see for houses that are for sale, that kind of a compartment where we have brochures along the map route.
And very quickly, before we let you go, Julie, what's the value of having art like this in your community?
Oh, my gosh. I don't even know where to start on that. It obviously is great for tourism and for economic reasons, but I think education is really important. You're seeing budgets cut in art programs across the country from grade school level right on up to the National Endowment for the Arts. And I think it's critical that art be available to people. Eau Claire is a fairly working class, middle class community, and education surveys have shown that 90% of our children would never see art in a gallery or museum with their families. 90% in a middle class family.
Julie, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it. We got a break to the news next here on the Ideas Network. We're on a whirlwind tour of public art in Wisconsin here on Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Such a fun morning, and hearing from you as well at 800-642-1234. What sculptures or other outdoor art exists in your community that you celebrate? Join in the conversation or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Let's bring in Diane now, wanting to make a comment from Watertown. Hi, Diane.
Good morning. I have kind of a silly comment that I'm embarrassed to say, but my family has gotten into the game Pokemon Go, which is a free app on your phone. And whenever we're anywhere we've never been before, you pull up the app and there's Pokestop. All of these Pokestops are something someone has found interesting and submit it to Pokemon. So we have found so many sculptures in so many corners of a cemetery, a churchyard, a schoolyard that we would have never found before.
Great idea, Diane. Thank you so much for calling in. Pokemon Go, finding the art around Wisconsin. Wisconsin Avenue in Milwaukee is about to be transformed by art, with more than 20 pieces being installed starting next month. The sculptures will be on display until October 21st, and it is our final stop in a tour of public art. Let's bring in Marilou Canode. She is the project director of Sculpture Milwaukee. Marilou, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So what is Sculpture Milwaukee? What's the mission?
Sculpture Milwaukee intends to bring world-class artwork to Wisconsin Avenue to make it broadly accessible to everybody and to really transform our business district into a cultural district.
And so what type of art is coming in? Can you give us some kind of a mix of what you're seeing that's going to come in?
Well, this year we're bringing in very different artists from different generations of practice. They use different materials, and they have different goals for their work. So, for example, we're bringing in an artist named Magdalena Abakanowicz, who's a quite well-known Polish artist who has been making work after her traumatic experiences during World War II in Europe. She has a range of five figures without heads. And work is really about all of us are a collective, but also sometimes there can be complicated factors in us being a collective. So it's both very beautiful, very accessible work, because we really identify with figurative pieces. You know, we recognize them, but she also poses questions about what does it mean to be a member of the society that we're in.
Are there sculptures that will be staying up from last year?
Yes, we have three pieces that we've held over from last year. One of them is a piece called Mood Sculpture by Chicago-based artist Tony Tassett. And it's five emojis of the happy face stacked upon each other. The piece on the very bottom is a sad face, and they go up to the very sunny happy face on top. And it's a very buoyant piece, very funny. It's 20 feet tall, and they're like giant gumballs in the street, and they look really very fun. And in a way, when you think about going to work every morning, sometimes you're in a fabulous mood and sometimes you're not in such a fabulous mood. So it's a really very charming piece, very lighthearted.
How does this really transform a street, an avenue? How does Wisconsin Avenue change through this art?
Well, you know, we use our streets as a way to get places. Sculpture Milwaukee, as a gift to the community, is really meant to help you slow down and enjoy being on the street. And the works that we're bringing in, many of them comment on the landscape that we're in the urban environment. They help trigger conversations about, well, what does our landscape look like? Why does it look like it does? You know, we have so many different generations of buildings in the downtown district that it's like you're watching an archaeology of place when you look at the city. So the works really help you slow down. And some of the works ask very funny questions, some of them a little more serious. And we, again, are bringing in artists who are using different materials, some very contemporary materials, some that we don't expect to see public sculpture made of. You know, we typically think of public art as a bronze general on a bronze horse, and so much of what contemporary artists are doing is to challenge that tradition by doing things that are a little more, you know, a little wackier. For example, this year we're bringing in an artist who's originally from Serbia, and she's painting a shadow of a very famous artwork on the ground. And so it's a little bit of a joke. It's really about the long shadow that Michelangelo casts on artists, but it's also about the shadows of history that stay with us when we walk in our cities.
And does Sculpture Milwaukee do tours, or is this all self-guided?
Well, you can certainly do self-guided tours. We have our website and our app that will have maps, but we're working on a series of curator-led tours, but also we're working very closely with the Milwaukee Art Museum to lead weekly trolley tours on Wednesdays. So lots of points of access for anybody who cares to come and understand a little bit more about the things that we're bringing in.
What are the unique challenges that outdoor public art presents to artists?
Well, you know, always there's the issue of durability. You have to be prepared to withstand a little overloving by the public. Sometimes people like to jump on pedestals or climb on sculpture, and that's tough on the artwork. We also have to think about artwork that can withstand the weather. So this year we're commissioning a piece by artist Shana McCall and Brent Budsberg. They're from Milwaukee, and they're building as if it's the inside of a barn out of wood. So how's that wood going to change in rain and under sun? So a lot of conversations about, you know, we want to keep the public safe and we want to keep the artwork safe. And an urban environment is also kind of tricky because, you know, you have very funny conditions. Sometimes the sidewalks are hollow, so you can't have very heavy works on top of the sidewalk, so you have to distribute the weight. So we work closely with the city. We work with engineers, the riggers, sometimes the artists. It's really a cast of hundreds that help make this successful.
Before we let you go, why is public sculpture so important?
Well, I think that really gets at the heart of why so many people want sculpture in the environment. You know, we celebrate great things by putting up a sculpture. We want to memorialize them. With Sculpture Milwaukee, it's really about adding another layer of value and meaning to our downtown district. You know, Wisconsin Avenue is really the central core, the Grand Avenue for the city of Milwaukee. And our founder, Steve Marcus, who's chairman of the Marcus Corporation, wanted to make a different kind of legacy for the city, and this is his idea. So it's a lot of fun. It entertains the people who work downtown, but it brings a lot of new people downtown, too.
Well, Mary Lou, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
Mary Lou Canode is Project Director of Sculpture Milwaukee. We started our tour with Clyde Winia, co-founder of Jurassic Park in Marshfield. We talked to Kathy Schlieve, City Administrator for the City of Waupun, also known as the City of Sculpture. We stopped in Eau Claire with Julie Pangallo, Head of Sculpture Tour Eau Claire. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Dr. Evermore has been turning bits of metal and other salvaged parts into fantastical sculpture since 1983. Let's take a listen.
I am Tom Every from Brooklyn, Wisconsin, the junk dealer. And now I am Dr. Evermore, the crazy guy, okay?
Evermore spent years running a salvage and demolition company. He saved industrial machinery parts from the more than 300 factories, breweries, power plants, and rail cars he dismantled and collected others. He became convinced these obsolete pieces of metal had become imbued with the spirit of their original creators and decided to make them into pieces of art that embodied that spirit.
We're working with pre-existing shapes and forms that lose their original identity, become something else, without altering any of them. So that is one of the Ten Commandments, okay? So when we look at something, it's plenty good the way it is, now how can we use it?
Dr. Evermore has created a myth about himself and his art. It begins with his first and most ambitious work, the Forevertron.
I am a slight rebel, and I don't particularly like certain entities which I don't really care to name, such as the establishment. I thought that I could get back into the heavens. That's where this thing came from. This is designed to perpetuate yourself back into the heavens in a glass ball, in a copper egg, on a magnetic lightning force beam. It is a could-be fantasy, and that's what it is, but it is built of the real material.
The real material the Forevertron is made of includes a 6,000-pound transformer from an old powerhouse dam in Prairie du Sac, a huge compressor from a Sheboygan power plant, and what the doctor calls a decontamination chamber. It was actually used by Apollo astronauts. The entire spaceship weighs more than 300 tons. Built in the 1980s with the help of a few friends, it's the centerpiece of the Evermore Sculpture Park, nestled in a grove of cottonwood trees on Highway 12 in Sauk County, across the road from the old Badger Army ammunition plant. In a nearby meadow are a bizarre assortment of huge metal birds with long ostrich-like necks and elaborate crowns of metal feathers. Some of the birds have musical instruments welded into their bodies, guitars, French horns, saxophones, trumpets. The feathers on these birds are flattened pieces of metal that can be played like chimes. They stand watching the Forevertron, ready to strike up the band when it's time for its celestial voyage. But before he takes off in the Forevertron, Dr. Evermore would like to pass on some of his skills to young artists with their own visions. He'd like to see the park become a studio for welders like him who enjoy giving new life to old metal.
All I can leave anybody is something, not any big bank accounts or anything else, and say unto you or anybody else, you can do it. Power on.
Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. This edition of Wisconsin Weekend was produced by Colleen Leahy, Brianne Shasso, and Keely Boltina. Dave Potraz provided technical direction. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kend, and we are on the hunt for public art right here on the Ideas Network.